You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 29th of June, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. We're not actually broadcasting live today. This is pre-recorded earlier on the Friday, but we've still got a great podcast for you. And of course, we have the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II with us, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today? Lovely day, isn't it?
Yes. Believe it or not, I've had to shut all the windows because it's that noisy outside. So I'm going to have to suffer in silence.
Well, I have to shut all the windows. I have to switch the fans off because, of course, you know, the microphone picks up every little bit of noise there is.
Exactly. But
I think it's worth it. I think we've got a really good podcast for the listeners today. We've got some really exciting stuff. Yeah, really exciting stuff to go into. I mean, but basically, I got a book sent through the other day. It's called The Holy Reich, Nazi Conceptions of Christianity, 1919 to 1945. And it was written by somebody called Richard Steigman Gall. I don't know if they're Jewish or not. It's obviously not written by anyone who is sympathetic to our views. But it does contain lots and lots of quotes and information that isn't readily available. You can't really buy this book. I had to buy a second-hand copy, fairly expensive, because they don't want people to get a hold of it. And it's an academic book, but they don't want people to know the information that's in it because it makes it really clear that National Socialism was Christian, which is, of course, what me and you have been saying for all this time, isn't it, Dennis?
Yeah, I've always said it from word go.
So it's nice to have some backup for this as well, especially out of the mouths of the people themselves. But before we really get into that, I just want to remind people that we've got prisoners of war. One of them was recently stabbed in prison. You can find the details out about that by going to radioaryan.com, and you'll see in the sidebar there's a link there. It says write to our prisoners of war. Click on that link and you'll get a list. You'll get people, mainly it's people in Britain that are in prison for speech crime at the moment. You'll see the guy that got stabbed. Please do write to him, write to these people, just send them a card, just let them know that, you know, they haven't been forgotten. It means a lot to them while they are in prison. I'm hoping to have somebody on Aryan Britannia next week to actually talk about these trials, the ongoing trials, because he's been present at them. But I just wanted to say that before we really get into the podcast. So please do write to our prisoners of war. Okay, well, the first person we're going to look at is Goebbels. And this is quoting directly from the book The Holy Reich. Despite his rejection of Christian institutions in Michael, the semi-autobiographical play written by Joseph Goebbels, he repeatedly affirms his Christian belief. Quote, Christianity is not a religion for the majority, much less for all. Cultivated by the few and translated into deeds, it is one of the most beautiful blossoms that the soul of a culture has ever borne. Goebbels displays a positive attitude towards the Bible as well. Quote, I take the Bible and all evening long I read the simplest and greatest sermon that has ever been given to mankind, the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are they who suffer persecution for the sake of justice, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Close quote. Goebbels' anti-clericalism is justified as a preservation of religion, not an attack upon it. Quote, today's youth is not against God. We are only against his cowardly religious menials who try to commercialize him as they do everything else. We have to square off against them if we want to square ourselves with God. Close quote. So I think that shows that even though he may have been against what the church had become, the same as we are now, he was certainly not against Christianity there. I mean, what do you know about Goebbels, and what are your thoughts on this, Dennis?
Interesting one, this, because I think the same applied to Himmler. This the Christian institutions were what they were against. They weren't exactly, as you say later on the front line. So that must have been what happened after World War One, and obviously he's looked at it and he's calling them cowards. Funnily enough, though, he was forced to leave the Catholic Church because of his marriage to Magda, because Magda was a Protestant, but also a Christian. And so some people may have assumed that, like Himmler leaving the church, that Goebbels was doing the same, but it wasn't really, you know, he was forced to leave the church, whereas Himmler, you know, decided himself to leave the church because of the same reason, because of this. Just like today, there's a lot of things what the Catholic Church say that I totally disagree with, and no doubt when the same powers were in power then, they were getting the Catholic Church to agree with. So I can see where he's coming from, but at the same time, he does not give up Christianity, and neither did his wife, because in the final letter from the bunker that she sent out, the final words are, you know, may God bless you and the holy effort of the Führer. So it's plain that she was a Christian as well.
Yeah, I think they were rightfully upset with the church and what the church was teaching: universalism, liberalism, progressivism. Mm-hmm. I think the political party that were saying that they were Christian as well, they were letting the country down.
Yeah,
that's the one. That's the one, and that's the one that the Pope specifically said to vote Adolf Hitler in and then stand down. I mean, the Pope got involved. Right. So they must have been pretty subversive.
We were infiltrated. Whether we were infiltrated or not, it wasn't functioning for the right on the right lines, you know.
Clearly not. And Goebbels, not just Goebbels as well. I mean, there were others that were Catholics that remained Catholic, but they sort of separated themselves from the actual Catholic Church for some reason.
Exactly.
But there was also a lot of Protestants. I mean, from reading this book, I mean, he's sort of really coming at it from the Protestant angle and saying that the Lutherans that were following Martin Luther, who exposed the Jews with all the Jews and their lies, and there was like a strand coming from Lutheran Protestantism that was very pro-racial, very anti-Jewish, and National Socialism brought both the Protestants and the Catholics together. And that was one of their big drives, was to bring both these two confessions that had been sort of warring amongst each other for quite some time, bring them together under having the same Christian ethics. They may both have had a different dogma, but the same ethics.
No, well, what I was going to say was, I don't think Hitler just brought the Protestants and the Catholics together, which was a major achievement. But what he did before they went into the Soviet Union, under the swastika, you know, he joined other religions as well, especially Orthodox Christianity. And then later, even the Muslims joined under the swastika, this banner under the swastika, there in the Balkans, when they joined with Hitler and declared a jihad on the same enemy, the Jew. So it was a crusade under the swastika, which again is a holy relic, symbolizing Christ's cross, etc. And it was amazing feat and an amazing achievement.
Well, it is. You just think about the trouble that we've had here, like the troubles in Ireland and Catholic and Protestant. And you think in Germany, they had, you know, they had so many wars, you know, like the 30 Years War, lots of other wars. And it was Catholic and Protestant. And under National Socialism, there was peace and they came together. But this was the thing that they united on, was Christian ethics. It was Christian action, not words, but actual deeds. And National Socialism, there's one quote, I don't think we've actually got it here today, but Hitler says about how National Socialism is actually, for the first time, Christianity being carried out in deed and in action, because it was the injunction to love your neighbor as you love yourself is based. That is nationalism. That's what nationalism is. Yeah. That's what National Socialism was. Well, let's have a look at another one of these members of the NSDAP. This is Walter Buch, who people probably haven't heard of. He's another party leader who demonstrated this commitment. He is not a well-known National Socialist, but as chairman of the party's Investigation and Conciliation Committee and president of the party's Supreme Court, he held one of the most powerful positions in the NSDAP. Like the others surveyed so far, Buch related National Socialism as a movement to Christ's own struggle, sounding a distinct note of triumphalism. He also demonstrated the kind of dualism between good and evil, Christ and Antichrist that marked the discourse of his fellow party members. To an assembly of the National Socialist Student League, he declared, "Life itself is a struggle. The National Socialist Weltanschauung stands unreservedly for this truth. It is the foundation of all its works and deeds. And with this conception, we follow the example of no one less than our Saviour. When point 24 of our programme says the party stands for a positive Christianity, here, above all, is the cornerstone of our thinking. Christ preached struggle, as did no other. His life was a struggle for his beliefs, for which he went to his death. From everyone he demanded a decision of either yes or no. That is the necessity, that man finds the power to decide between yes and no." Buch drew direct comparisons not only between Christ's struggle and the National Socialists, but between Christ's followers and members of the NSDAP. Quote, "Just as Christianity only prevailed through the fanatical belief of its followers, so too shall it be with the spiritual movement of National Socialism." Close quote. So it's been quite open there that the very central part of National Socialism was that the party stands for positive Christianity, saying here that is the cornerstone of the National Socialist thinking. You know, it's a very, very important point of the program. And what this is showing is that, you know, it wasn't just Hitler saying these things in public. It was other members of the NSDAP as well, important members of the NSDAP. They were saying it in private as well as saying it in public. And I do like the fact that he's drawing, you know, a comparison between Christians and National Socialists here. And yeah. Saying Christ and Antichrist, and you know, it's quite obvious, isn't it, that National Socialism is Christian?
Well, there's a book, I can't remember the title at the moment, which interested me very early on when I started looking into all this National Socialists, and it was about the Nazis who were put on trial and then were to be hung, and the book's about the American padre who was taken. Confessions, and even the National Socialists who had discarded Christianity throughout, you know, the war and what have you, they turned to Christianity at the end, and it was amazing how many actually did who weren't originally Christian, if you understand what I'm saying.
So a lot of people actually came to it through this. Well, I think, you know, a lot of people that question Christianity, you probably find they get a changed view of it listening to us, Dennis, because we're going.
I like to think so, because it's not as weak as they make it out, kind of turns with the cheek and all this kind of carry on. You know, the 229ers were Christian and they didn't take any prisoners. You know what I mean?
Well, it's because we're going back to the actual source material, going back to the Bible, seeing what the Bible says. And that's what the National Socialists did. That's what they were talking about. They weren't talking about what the church had done, or, you know, taking communion, or people have to get baptized. They were talking about the moral commandments and the Christian ethics, which is the same.
Yeah, the basics of it.
And that's the same regardless of what time we are living in. That's, you know, natural law, isn't it?
Without a doubt, it is. Christ was, as Goebbels, I think it was said, that he was the enemy of the Jew. There was no bigger enemy. And so, you know, Judaism as such was against Christ. And so a natural ally to the National Socialists.
Well, they draw links between Aryan and Christian. They used the two words interchangeably as well. So it shows that Aryan didn't have, you know, pagan overtones or anything. They used the word Aryan in the same instances as when they used the word Christian, and they used the Jew was like the devil, you know, good and evil, Christ, Jew, you know, white man, black man. It's like a duality between everything.
That's right.
And talking in biblical language as well. Well, the next one we've got is Hans Schemm. And it's actually spelled S-C-H-E-M-M, not spelled like the biblical Shem. And he was the head of the NSDAP Teachers League. Now, he's another Lutheran National Socialist who advanced a very similar conception of race. Like Buch, Schem is not usually ranked among the National Socialist elite. However, as head of the National Socialist Teachers League, the NSLB, he was in charge of one of the party's most important ancillary organisations. Typifying the tendency of the elite to hold many feudalities, he was also Gauleiter of Bayreuth, a site of particular symbolism in the National Socialist imagination. And after 1933, he was Bavarian Minister of Education and Culture. So this is an important person. He's in charge of the schooling, basically. And Schem, Schem was particularly known throughout the Reich for his slogan, quote, "Our religion is Christ and our politics fatherland." I mean, that sums it all up in just one quote, really, doesn't it, Dennis?
Yeah, we acted out. I mean, these are people probably other people haven't heard of, but then again, I do believe there would have been a reason behind that anyway. But these are important people who should have been heard of, and that's the interesting point as well.
Well, this is why we haven't heard of them, isn't it? And I mean, that slogan, I mean, this was a slogan. He was known throughout the Reich for this slogan: "Our religion is Christ and our politics fatherland." And yet I haven't heard of it before.
Whenever you heard anything like that.
Yeah, that was a political slogan that everybody knew. His speeches, which were famous in Bavaria, were designed to cast National Socialism as a religious revival. As a police report stated, Schem speaks like a pastor and often ended his deliveries with the Lutheran hymn, "A Mighty Fortress is Our God." In one of his speeches, he spoke of God in the National Socialist conceptual universe, quote, "Our confession to God is a confession of a doctrine of totality, to give ultimate significance to the totalities of race, resistance, and personality, there is added the supreme totalitarian slogan of our folk, religion and God. God is the greatest totality and extends over all else." Close quote. Here, Schem makes specific reference to the totalitarian nature of National Socialist discourse, but he makes it clear that the totalizing claims of National Socialism as a Weltanschauung did not preclude the possibility that the Weltanschauung could be based on a variety of Christianity. So, this is where National Socialism came from exactly as Goebbels said, from reading the Bible and meditating on it and thinking
That's
about
right,
it.
Yeah. Yeah, most people believe it come from the occult, but I've always argued that point.
Well, it certainly didn't come from Madame Blavatsky, did it?
No, they've tried to run that one down me.
Or Aleister Crowley or some Freemasons
book. Bunch, yeah. But, I mean, it's plain to see when you understand the workings of Freemasonry and what Hitler did and then the book of Blavatsky all runs against everything that Hitler stood for. So when they're saying this, just trying to, aim at the illiterate, I suppose. But if you know anything about, Germany and Adolf Hitler and his actions, it went totally against it, completely opposite.
Well, the people at the time were a lot more literate than people are today.
I'm sure they were, yeah.
They would have been a lot more well-read, and they would have recognised when these people were using quotes from the Bible, they would have recognised all those quotes from the Bible that are in Mein Kampf.
Mm.
People today don't recognise them, and they think, well, no, it doesn't talk about the Bible at all. They don't realise it's full of quotes from there. And a lot of the time, with these quotes, a lot of the time it's at the end of the sentence. I mean, it's the conclusion. The conclusion to something will be taken from the Bible. So, he will posit a question or a rhetorical question, and then he'll use an analogy from the Bible to answer it, which is, confirming that the Bible is correct. And that's what his ideas are based on.
That's right.
Moving back to the quote from the book here. "Far from conflicting loyalties, for Schem, Christianity and National Socialism went hand in hand. Quote, we are no theologians, no representatives of the teaching profession in this sense. We put forth no theology, but we do claim one thing for ourselves, that we place the great fundamental idea of Christianity at the centre of our ideology. The hero and sufferer Christ himself stands at the centre." Close quote. Remember, this is the guy that's in charge of all the schooling. He's the Bavarian Minister for Education and Culture. And he's been there with the National Socialists right from the start. So for him to be able to say that, you know, he must be secure in saying that. He must know that that is a fact. Otherwise, he wouldn't be saying it, would he?
We wouldn't be allowed to say it, would he?
Yeah. Yeah, it's obvious, you know, this is sanctioned speech that he's saying. This is what he's supposed to be saying. It's not
that's right.
some revolutionary that's going against the rest of the party.
Yeah, like, is it Rosenberger was the one who calls this in the cabinet, I think?
Yeah, but even he wrote that we needed to, you know, we needed to take the Jews, needed to make Christianity anti-Jewish. That's what he really wanted to see, which, you know, all the National Socialists wanted to do that. I mean, they wanted to strip out any reverence for the Jews from Christianity. Where they were mistaken in that is that they thought, well, if we get rid of bits of the Old Testament, it will do that. The motivation is good. You know, wanting to take the Jewishness out of it, but the actual way of them doing it was wrong, because it's the Old Testament that proves that Christ is correct. All the laws, the way that politics should be set up, is in the Old Testament. And the idea that the Old Testament is Jewish comes from a fundamental mistake that today's modern Jews are the same as the people of the Old Testament. And we've gone into that, you know, times on this podcast.
I think Henry Ford actually said, though, if you look at the Bible, if a Christian looks at the Bible through Jewish glasses, then he's not reading the Bible proper, meaning, obviously, the Jewish influence is there and should be ignored.
That's a very, you know, that's a very good way to put it, looking at it through Jewish glasses. And we also had problems with Jews helping with the translations when it's not so cut and clear. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, well, the Catholics were trying to ban the people from reading the Bible. That's terrible. Well, yes and no, because the Catholics were also trying to prevent people going to the Jews to help them translate it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, you know, this is why we get this idea that a Gentile is an individual, when the word Gentile just means nation, which, you know, it gives a totally different reading of the New Testament when you understand that the word Gentile means nation. It doesn't mean an individual. And the Israelites were a Gentile. They were a nation. The Israelites were. So, you know, that's just right. One point. But to go to the people that Jesus said were devils to ask to help translate the Bible, I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's a funny way of going about things, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what the Catholics were trying to prevent. And this is why the Jews then funded the printing of Bibles and funded the production of them and the distribution of them. Jews were involved in that because the Bibles that were being sent out, you know, weren't translated correctly. They were putting Jew in there all the time. So people thought that it was these modern Jews that were in the Old Testament when they're not.
That's right. It's a funny story for you. When I was a kid, I got my dad a present and I went to the shop. It was his birthday and I went to the shop to buy him a Bible. And when I brought the Bible home, he took one look, he said, wrong Bible.
Probably good news Bible or something.
he said it certainly weren't a Catholic Bible.
Well, there are some terrible translations about. I mean, they all politically correct them now. I mean, the King James isn't perfect, but I would advise getting the King James version, the original, really. And I think the Orthodox use that as well. They have the Septuagint for the Old Testament, and then they have the same as the King James for the New. And I think the Catholics have the Douay Rheims. And the first one of that is very good. But then they changed it for the official version that was brought out, so I couldn't really comment on the second one. But the first one's very good, if you can get hold of it. Michael Hoffman sells copies of the original one, the banned Bible, the first Catholic one, which, it's very good, and the notes are good as well. Well, let's go back to these quotes. Shem also concerned himself with the ordination of race. In a 1931 debate he held with prominent Protestant churchmen, he directly confronted those who claimed that National Socialism had replaced Christianity with a new race religion. Race is clearly the decisive issue, and I have already expressed this view in a spirited discussion at a pastor's conference in Nuremberg. Representatives of the church voiced the suspicion that within National Socialism could be found a deification of the concept of race. I can understand that an earnest theologian who does not quite know our movement perceives a danger in it when he notices time and again that we place racial thought in the foreground, when he notices that we would make the purity of blood the highest law. However, those who know our movement and introduce themselves to its deep commitment to Christianity immediately lay aside their objections. Race and religion give rise to each other. I do not believe that the folk are obliged to put aside race for the sake of religion, otherwise all natural and historical development would be invalid. So he's quite clearly saying there that race and religion are linked together. And they have a
deep commitment. They're in the Bible, aren't they?
Yeah. Totally. I mean, this guy is debating with other Protestants to show because this is another accusation, isn't it? People will say, well, National Socialism should be your religion. But that's not what the National Socialists wanted. You know, they certainly didn't see National Socialism as a religion or a replacement for it.
There was a case of an interesting account on race where this German actually was married to a half-Jew and got separated and then later married a fully Aryan woman. But when they had a child, the kid had tremendous Jewish features. And it turns out that this Aryan woman had bore a child of a Jew previously. And so that contamination just completely wiped out the Aryan in her.
I can remember reading that in the Holy Reich. There is mention of that. I think it was one of them might have written a play or something about it. I forget who it was that actually wrote it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were saying that, you know, it that contamination just of sleeping with a Jew, I mean, that person is then contaminated from then on and it could show physically. And there is some scientific evidence to show that, you know, that does happen. You know, these women that have lots of partners, and then when they may have a child years later, and it may look like one of their partners. And there is, you know, sound scientific evidence.
Throwbacks as well, isn't there? I heard of a couple, I think, in South Africa, two white couples who had a black child. That's because back in their, further back in their history, you know, the grandparents, they'd had a black child, and it was still in the genes, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, it stays there forever. And this is why, this was so important to the National Socialists, that we have to have racial hygiene. We have to keep the nation pure. Purity of blood needs to be, you know, the highest ideal that we hold to. And it was for the National Socialists. And they saw that as a Christian endeavor. It was preserving what God had created. God created the races. God created the nations. Therefore, we should preserve them. It's common sense.
That's right. That's right.
Moving back to the quotes. In Shem's view, the priority given to the folk in point 24 of the party programme did not mean a demotion of Christianity. Mixing racial and religious metaphors, Shem proclaimed, quote, "When one puts steel into the fire, the steel will glow and shine in its own distinctive way. And likewise with every other metal. When I put the German folk into the fire of Christianity, the German folk will react in its racially distinctive way. It will build German cathedrals and create a German hymn. We want to preserve, not subvert, what God has created. Just as the oak tree and the fir tree retain their difference in a forest, why do the trees in the forest not interbreed? Why is there not only one type of tree? Why should our concept of race suddenly turn into the Marxist concept of a single type of human? We are accused of wanting to deify the idea of race, but since race is willed by God, we want nothing else but to keep the race pure in order to fulfill God's will." And it says here is an explicit evocation of the orders of creation As did other theologians, Shem established the sanctity of racial separation, the theological precondition for positing the Germans as God's chosen people. As much as he paid attention to the racial question, however, Shem did not argue for the supremacy of race. Indeed, he explicitly rejected the notion of racial materialism, since he considered materialism of any kind to be Marxist. Quote, "The spiritual for us always remains primary. Blood and race are secondary. The cause of all things is and remains the Creator. Race, folk, and nation represent only instruments which lead to God." Close quote. And Shem even rejected Darwin, whose ideas, along with Marx's, represented the, quote, "political formulation of materialism." Close quote. Well, that's interesting, that. I mean, he's saying that supremacism is Marxist because it's materialist.
Yeah. Well, it's same as Judaism, isn't it? Or should we say the Talmudic side of it is supremacist.
Definitely, but the Marxist probably wouldn't like to hear that supremacism is Marxist, but, you know, it's basically looking at things materially rather than spiritually. I guess spiritually, everything, all life has value spiritually. But if you're materialist, you look at things materially, then you can say, well, you know, the white race are superior to everyone else, you know, white supremacy. But according to him, he's saying, well, no, that's Marxist. That's Marxist thought. So that's a very interesting...
And the rejection of Darwin.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people associate with natural socialism.
Well, a lot of them rejected Darwin.
As I say, because
it's materialism.
Turn to tell some of these pagans.
I mean, the way that Adolf Hitler framed racial purity, it wasn't through Darwin. It was through the Book of Genesis. It was about the original sin being race mixing. That's what caused, you know, the fall from paradise. That's what caused man to be kicked out of paradise, was race mixing. You know, there was no mention of, you know, evolutionary theories which talk about mixing of races to produce evolution. That doesn't produce evolution. Devolution produces mulattoes. Yeah. It destroys civilizations. That's what Darwin's idea is.
Yeah, well, they created this world where it goes against everything, against the Bible. You know, they say we go back millions of years and the dinosaurs and we come from monkeys. It's like a whole collection of things put together to destroy the argument of religion, which has been quite successful. But they've tried to put that on the National Socialists as well.
Well, we did a good podcast on evolution quite a while back that new listeners might want to check out, where we talked about evolution, didn't we? I went into that for a whole podcast.
All right. I refuse to be a monkey.
No, that's just it, isn't it? You know, it says that it says in the Bible that people who aren't sufficiently loving of the truth, people that are not keen enough to find the truth out, they will be sent a strong delusion. And, you know, what stronger delusion can there be than to think that you are descended from a monkey?
Exactly.
And these evolutionary scientists are so arrogant. Yeah, they're so arrogant. And so that, you know...
I mean, these are theories being taught as fact. That's the arrogance.
What gets me is the BBC Nature documentaries. They talk about it as if it's all fact and, you know, as if we were there for millions of years watching it all evolve. And it's all a nonsense.
Yeah.
They used to present it as a theory back in the 70s.
I'm sure they kind of move things slowly and then they switch, don't they?
Yeah. I can remember it switching in the 80s and suddenly it was all talking about evolution as if it was all fact. And before then, you know, it had hardly really been spoken of. It just suddenly changed. Well, let's look at the main man himself, quoting from the book. "These were among the many voices of the National Socialist leadership. But did the Führer, Adolf Hitler, also speak in the discourse of Christ and Antichrist? Much is already known through the Bible of the National Socialist movement, Hitler's Mein Kampf. It undoubtedly spoke of the Jewish problem in racial terms, but it also sounded a strongly Christian note. In its pages, Hitler gave no indication of being an atheist or agnostic, or of believing only in a remote rationalist deity. Indeed, he referred continually to a providential, active God. Quote, "What we must fight for is to safeguard the existence and reproduction of our race, so that our people may mature for the fulfillment of the mission allotted it by the Creator of the universe. Peoples that bastardize themselves, or let themselves be bastardized, sin against the will of eternal providence." And this is something that I've pointed out again and again, is that Mein Kampf is written in the terms of a Christian. It is written in Christian terms. It may only mention Christianity twice in there, but the way that it's written, it shows that Hitler was a Christian. I did a whole podcast showing that there were these direct quotes. Every other page had a direct quote from the Bible in it. So it's nice to see an academic has picked up on that as well. And that's what he's saying here, a strongly Christian note. Continuing, Hitler cast his anti-Semitism in economic, political, and even eugenic terms, but he frequently concluded on a religious basis. Quote, "Hence today I believe that I am acting in accordance with the will of the Almighty Creator. By defending myself against the Jew, I am fighting for the work of the Lord." Close quote. As did his mentor Eckhart. Hitler emphasized the Aryan belief in the afterlife over and against Jewish belief, which, according to Hitler, could not even be called a religion. Quote, "Due to his own original special nature, the Jew cannot possess a religious institution, if for no other reason, because he lacks idealism in any form, and hence belief in a hereafter is absolutely foreign to him, and a religion in the main sense cannot be imagined which lacks the conviction of survival after death in some form." Close quote. Interestingly, he's mentioning Eckhart here, but Eckhart wrote that book, From Moses to Bolshevism, which contains a lot of anti-Christian stuff in it, and has Hitler
saying... Yeah, he's often quoted as teaching anti-Christianity to Hitler.
But according to the author of The Holy Reich, it says that Eckhart was a Christian. He was a confirmed Christian. And that book itself, it's anti the Old Testament. And he says that there's no way that the quotes attributed to Hitler in that book actually came from Hitler. No way that they came from Hitler.
Don't surprise me at all.
And they must have known that at the time. I can remember somebody, I think he called himself Wolf, and he was a German, and he said that there was literature at the time that was warning the German public that there was propaganda that had been put out that was supposedly accredited to Hitler, and it wasn't by him at all. And the author of this Holy Reich confirms that about that book by Eckhart. Continuing, here Hitler speaks of the Aryan rather than the Christian, but there is an implicit equating of the two made explicit on other occasions. Consistent with his party comrades, Hitler regarded the antithesis of the Jew to be the Christian, in this case Christ himself, as well as the Aryan. Quote, "The Jew's life is only of this world, and his spirit is inwardly as alien to true Christianity as his nature 2,000 years previously was to that great founder of the new doctrine. Of course, the latter made no secret of his attitude towards the Jewish people, and when necessary, he even took to the whip to drive from the temple of the Lord this adversary of all humanity, who then, as always, saw in religion nothing but an instrument for his business practices. In return, Christ was nailed to the cross, while our present-day party Christians, by that he means the Centre Party, debase themselves to begging for Jewish votes at elections and later try to arrange political swindles with atheistic Jewish parties." So we've got a reference there to them, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Well, there's a direct reference there to that Centre Party.
Yeah.
And they're the ones
which
that...
Which is why Pope pulls them down.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, that shows you that the Pope was a good guy. He was thinking along the same lines as Hitler, wasn't he? Closing that party.
For sure. Down. Yeah, that's why I kind of pointed out that he was the last Pope.
Yeah, they were claiming to be Christian, and yet they were, you know, working with the Jews and taking money from the Jews.
yeah,
debasing themselves. Well, let's have some reports of Hitler just pretending to be Christian. That's the next quote I've selected here. Whereas Hitler is certainly mendacious about many things in Mein Kampf, he is surprisingly frank about the basic contours of the National Socialist programme. Nonetheless, other historical sources contend that the public stance Hitler took towards Christianity was deceptive, that Hitler was in fact a hater of Christianity who simply posed otherwise for the sake of politics. Historians have long claimed to find Hitler's real attitude on religion in the works of Hermann Rauschning. One book in particular, Hitler Speaks, is consistently employed to argue that Hitler's professions in Mein Kampf were nothing more than opportunism, that beneath this cloak of piety stood a duplicitous hater of Christianity and everything it stood for. According to Rauschning, Hitler stated in April 1933, quote, "Neither of the confessions, Catholic or Protestant, they are both the same, has any future left. At least not for the Germans. Italian fascism may perhaps make its peace with the Church in God's name. I will do it too. Why not? But that won't stop me stamping out Christianity in Germany, root and branch. One is either a Christian or a German. You can't be both. Do you really believe the masses will ever be Christian again? Nonsense. Never again. That tale is finished. No one will listen to it again. But we can hasten matters. The parsons will be made to dig their own graves. They will betray their God to us. They will betray anything for the sake of their miserable little jobs and incomes." Close quote. The conspiratorial tone of this account of the private Hitler has convinced many church historians that Hitler was a wolf in sheep's clothing, anti-Christian to the core, and from the outset of his career. The caricature Rauschning presents of Hitler's rantings should alone have raised questions as to its authenticity, but the more troubling fact remains that Rauschning's book stands completely alone in handing down sayings of this nature from this period. It is not for nothing that these factors should raise questions. Hitler Speaks is now considered to be fraudulent. As a recent biographer has put it, quote, "especially the chapter Hitler in Private is untrustworthy through and through, a product of war propaganda. Rauschning's conversations with Hitler are far off fantasies." Close quote. Moreover, Rauschning was too peripheral to the movement to have been a part of Hitler's inner circle of confidence, as he consistently maintained. However, despite the highly questionable nature of Rauschning as a primary source, some historians curiously persist in using him. I wonder why they would persist in using a discredited source like that, Dennis. I wonder.
Well, I mean, war propaganda, I mean, I've said it many times, and they don't want Europeans today to realise that that was a holy war, and this is just another example of... It's funny how these books actually get printed.
Well, I've seen that quoted. I've seen memes on Google Images with that quote on there, and I've had people say to me, "Well, what about this? What Hitler saying he's going to stamp out Christianity?" And it's a fake. You know, it was put up there deliberately to make the National Socialists appear to be anti-Christian, and it's a very clever fake as well, because, you know, because where it says the parsons will be made to dig their own graves, you know, there are
everything pagan wants to hear.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, I mean, as we said earlier, they did criticise the church establishment, but not Christianity itself. That's the difference, sure. And that's the difference that's in Table Talks as well. It's not, it doesn't have Hitler criticising the, you know, the preachers or them distorting Christianity. It's attacking Christianity itself, which you never hear in anything else that he says. You never see it anywhere else. So I would include Table Talks along with this Rauschning book as not trustworthy. Okay, let's move on. Let's have a look at some of Hitler's early views. Other sources for Hitler's private and confidential views offer no indication of an anti-Christian agenda or even indifference in religious questions. In a party gathering at Munich's Bürger Braukeller in 1922, Hitler dealt with the question of whether one could be both an anti-Semite and a Christian. Quote, I say my Christian feelings point me to my Lord and Saviour as a fighter. And there is tumultuous prolonged pause. They point me towards the man who, once lonely and surrounded by only a few followers, recognised these Jews and called for battle against them, and who, as the true God, was not only the greatest as a sufferer, but also the greatest as a warrior, as a Christian, and a human being. I read the passage which declares to us how the Lord finally rose up and seized the whip to drive the usurers, the brood of serpents and snakes, from the temple. And there is more tumultuous applause. And again, this is interesting, this bit here where he calls them a brood of serpents and snakes. That's a quote from the New Testament. And it calls the Jews a brood of serpents, a race of serpents, a generation of serpents, it calls them in one place. So just the fact that he uses that wording, a brood of serpents, knows that, that tells us that he's very well aware of what the New Testament says about this. He was very well read in the Bible. Again, in this speech delivered in front of a mostly National Socialist audience, Hitler referred to Jesus as the true God. He made it plain that he regarded Christ's struggle as direct inspiration for his own. He added, quote, 2,000 years ago, a man was also denounced by the same race. The man was dragged before the court, and it was also said of him, he stirred up the people. So he too had been a rabble-rouser. And against whom? Against God, they cried. Yes, indeed, he roused the rabble, but against the God of the Jews, for their God is only gold. And then there's more tumultuous applause. For Hitler, Jesus was not just one archetype among others, but he was, quote, our greatest Aryan leader, close quote. So, he never saw Jesus as a Jew. None of them saw Jesus as a Jew. I mean, they argued that. There are plenty of quotes where they said that.
Can I just say that the thing that interested me in that previous paragraph was, to drive out the usurers. Well, as you know, the Catholic Church gave in to usury after, many, many years of not allowing it. So that's another example of what Goebbels saying, that, they've gone off the front lines and in at the back somewhere. Because usually that's the main weapon of the Jews, and the Catholic Church eventually allowed it.
Well, this is just it, isn't it? They were saying that the Church has gone off its way. It's gone off the path, and we need to get it back on the straight and narrow again. And National Socialism is going to do that. And by speaking against usury, that was one of the ways that they did it.
Yeah,
by getting rid of it.
And originally, because it was wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was, and that was a fault of both the Catholics and the Protestants. I mean, a lot of people think the Catholics were against usury, and then there was the Reformation, and the Protestants allowed usury. But before the Reformation, the Catholic Church was starting to redefine the word usury itself. And then when we had the Reformation, the Protestants just continued it. And both of them, both Catholic and Protestant, redefined the word usury just to mean biting interest, when it actually means any interest at all. It's any profit that's earned without taking any risk.
Yeah. Scandalous, really.
It is. When you think that our whole monetary system is now based upon it, everything's based upon it. And people just expect to earn money from their money. They expect to have interest wherever they put it. And how it always used to be is that, you could only loan out money if you had profits from something. So a country could only get rich by, hard work and intelligence and lots of innovation. That was the only way a country could get rich.
Not by connivance.
Yeah, but these banks made it so that you could just create money and then the bankers could get rich.
Yeah. Something not right somewhere, which, like I said, is why they took that stance, I'm sure. That there was something wrong with the Catholic Church at that time when they were allowing such laws to be passed.
Well, they clearly spoke about it. I mean, there was infiltration of the Catholic Church, wasn't there? I mean, what you had...
Yeah, exactly.
Before the Reformation, you had the Enlightenment, and you had this infiltration of Kabbalah ideas into the church. And again, this comes from the Jews saying, "Oh, we're the people of the Old Testament," and then Christians going to them and thinking, "Well, if they're the people of the Old Testament, then they must know lots about Christianity. So we'll ask them to, you know, these questions." Yeah. And that's how it occurred. And also through Jews that claimed to be Christians. And once you had these conversos, once they were claiming to be a Christian, they would then, you know, slip in these Jewish ideas, these Kabbalah ideas, occult ideas. And that was at the time when you started seeing naked pictures of Jesus as well. Lots of nude pictures of people from the Bible, you know, which, what are nudes doing as a religious painting?
Yeah.
It's pornographic. Michael Hoffman's written all about this. I forget what the name of the book is, but it's a really good book. The Occult Renaissance Church of Rome, that's what it's called. And he traces it right back to that time and this infiltration of the church. And, of course, now that's come right to its end point now.
Yeah.
Total infiltration. You know, they've got their liberal communist pope that tolerates homosexuality and he's even tolerating abortion now, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He's even saying the atheists can go to heaven now.
Atheists, yeah.
So, what can you say?
Well, we really need the people that do stand up against it, we need to support them. Support people like Bishop Williamson and Michael Hoffman and E. Michael Jones. I mean, we have still got really good Catholics out there that are speaking the truth.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got a quick list here of the fascist and the National Socialist regimes, what Hitler replaced the leaders with. Obviously, formerly Rothschild ran. I mean, Germany himself was Roman Catholic, Italy, Mussolini, Roman Catholic, Franco, Salazar, Portugal, Roman Catholic, Pétain, Vichy State, Roman Catholic, Pierre Lavelle, Roman Catholic, Vichy government, Joseph Tito, Slovakian State, Roman Catholic, Vidkun Quisling, Norway, Protestant, Anton Mozart, Holland, Protestant, Emil Hatcher, Bohemia Moravia, Roman Catholic, Conrad Henlein, Sudetenland, Roman Catholic, Leon de Grel, Belgium, Roman Catholic, Ante Pavlic, Croatia, Roman Catholic. Well, they say, you know, to judge a person by his actions and his friends. There you go.
Well, they're all people that spoke publicly about their faith as well. They weren't lukewarm Christians, were they?
No, that's right. Well, I think one of them was a Catholic priest.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, that you're bringing up this, you know, this Catholic side, because this book, he sort of concentrates on the Protestant side. He's trying to say that it's, you know, it was a Protestant thing because there was this, you know, this Protestant idea of the Jew being the bad guy anyway. But the history of the Roman Catholic, the history of the Catholic Church is full of, you know, identifying the problems that the Jew causes. That's why they kept them separate from everybody else. So maybe this guy's trying to sort of cover up for the Catholics a bit in the Holy Reich. So it's good that you're bringing out all this Catholic information as well, Dennis. I dare say we'll have
It's the whole of the Roman Empire, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I dare say we'll be able to get some more from this book as we go along, as we go through it. But I think, you know, those quotes that we've just gone through today, they really do show
powerful.
That the National Socialism was based on Christianity, and it wasn't just something that was said in public. They didn't have ideas of getting rid of it. They saw National Socialism as the true Christianity. And there's one quote which I didn't include where he says this is the first time that Christianity has actually really been put into practice. And what he's saying there is that all the wars that have been caused and the church has struggled to actually put it into practice. And what the National Socialists were doing were really putting it into practice at the state level. This, what's the word? Common need before private greed. That was the slogan. Common need before private greed, which is
Christian
love thy neighbor. Yeah. he was saying that you've got to put the need of the nation first. I mean, they were quite advanced in their understanding of it, weren't they? Saying that
nationalists, you know, isn't it? Very nationalist.
Yeah, well, the nation was created by God, the race was created by God, therefore the intermixing of them is against God. It's destroying
these
God's
laws
creation.
Were created by God, so we stick with them.
Yeah, well, the only people that are really saying that now is Christian Identity, which is pointing that out. But it is a fact. If God created the nations, then interbreeding between them is destroying his creation. And God looks down and he doesn't see his sons anymore. He sees bastards that have been created by men, which is obviously, you know, if you were the devil and you wanted to hurt God and you wanted to harm his creation, that's exactly what you'd be doing, isn't it? Encouraging them to interbreed between one another. And the National Socialists worked that out.
The thing is, people have to understand that the leaders of Britain and of France, they're not French, and the leaders of Britain are English. And when you got the French Prime Minister a while back saying that if you don't breed, interbreed, then we're going to bring out laws to make interbreed, that's not a Frenchman talking, you know what I mean? He might sound French, you know, and he might be the French Prime Minister, but he's not French.
Sarkozy used the exact word as well, miscegenate.
That's the one, yes, I close it.
He used the exact wording, miscegenate. And Macron's doing the same today.
Macron's just the same. Exactly, I'm going to say that. No different. Yeah, he's not devils. French.
They're devils in human disguise, trying to carry out the devil's plan and interbreed us out. Exactly, you know, it's the Kudinov-Kalogi plan, isn't it? To turn the whole of Europe into Arabs.
Yeah, into a subordinate Africa.
A subordinate brown race with mingling between white Europeans and black Negroes. So they all look like Egyptian Arabs. That's the plan. And that's what they're doing. That's what all these adverts are, these pushing of blacks and black and white couples on the telly.
Yeah.
All the time. Absolutely constant. And the National Socialists saw that, preventing that as you know, a religious compulsion. It was a religious thing to prevent that. Not a biological thing, but a religious directive that they had to prevent that. And that was the highest good, was to preserve the purity of the race, which is what we're all about today. All right, Dennis,
we've
reached the end of the podcast. Thank you for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget, we do require your donations to keep the website going, and we do have a Bitcoin wallet at the bottom of every article. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you, and of course, we do hope you all have a great sunny weekend ahead of you.